the khutbah that Mulay Zakaria reads now and then is a statement of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi. It reads that rather than getting too much of information pertaining to fiqh and jurisprudence and trying to work out the nitty-gritties, etc., the more important and the more effective thing is the stories of the awliya of the past, the events, how did they conduct themselves, for they had understood deen and they had applied the deen. In all facets of the life, they had applied it. So if you only listen to concepts and only listen to theories, without the application, it then becomes quite difficult. And here are applications. Okay, all right. In this situation, what did our elder do? How did he do it? What did he do and how did he do it? So we have that type of confidence and reliance in them that they had understood it more than we had understood. Perhaps we are missing out a point or two, and they had understood it completely and they applied fully. If we leave it to our intelligence and reasoning, then perhaps our reasoning and intelligence may mislead us. Sometimes we are overcome with nafs, or sometimes we don't have that level of understanding and sight. There was a wedding procession that was going, and the bridegroom did not have a shawl. So the bridegroom normally puts on a shawl, so he's distinguishing the crowd that this is the bridegroom, this is the marriage. So as they are proceeding, in the old days, you'll find at least 200-300 people are moving, all in one go they are moving, and everybody becomes curious now to know at whose wedding, who's the bridegroom. So someone inquired, by whose wedding is this? Whose wedding is this? So this person showed him, okay, this is the bridegroom, but the shawl belongs to me. So he didn't have a shawl, so he borrowed the shawl. The shawl belongs to me, but he is the bridegroom. So people overheard this. Said, "Bhai, what was the need for you to say that this shawl belongs to me? You're spoiling things now." So anyway, the second person asked, because there's a big crowd now, so the second person and the third person will also inquire. So the second person asked, "Bhai, this, whose nikah is this and who's the bridegroom?" So again he says, "You know what? The nikah is so and so, he is the bridegroom, but the shawl doesn't belong to me." So anyway, it continued, and then the third person asked, "Bhai, ye kiska nikah hai, ye kiski barat hai, whose wedding procession is this?" So now he says, this is the bridegroom, but don't discuss the aspect about the shawl." So those people got fed up with him, "Bhai, you're spoiling the whole thing, just return the shawl to that person." Now some people, bazo ko ghar ki akal nahi hoti, they don't have that level of understanding. Naturally, they don't have it. It's not that they're doing it deliberately, but they don't have that level of understanding. And then people's understanding also differ. One person's understanding is taking him one way, another person's understanding is taking him another way. So the easier way is to see what did our elders do. in this situation, what did they do? How did they conduct themselves? How did they manage themselves? There will be different type of situations coming up. And in the face of these situations, we need to see how did they conduct themselves. Rather than we just employing our own reasoning and understanding and then doing it. The elders generally, they had a very holistic approach, complete approach. Imam Shafi rahmatullah alayhi was discussing on Masla with some contemporary of his. And they couldn't just get to any agreement. They discussed for length, but they couldn't just come to any agreement. Imam Shafi rahmatullah alayhi held on to the hand of the elder, of that contemporary, and told him, see, can't we just remain friends, even though we cannot agree in a single issue? So, on the one end is a masla. Imam Shafi rahmatullah alayhi has got his view, and he's got his view, or they can't arrive to any type of agreement. So that is, be it as it may, but that doesn't mean that this must now extend into the, or encroach onto the friendship. The friendship will remain as it were. Friendship is not affected in any way. The muhabbat, the level of love and respect is still maintained. Imam Shafi rahmatullah used to say that this ilm that we have got, it is a line that connects all the people of knowledge. It's a line, it's a thread that connects all the people of knowledge. Right? So when it connects the people of knowledge, then that line has to be preserved. But if that same ilm, the same line, is used to run someone down, right, or to express one's superiority over the other, or to be hopeful that that person stumbles so that I can expose him, or he can get exposed, right, or to somehow show that I am the most learned person in the entire crowd, right, whether it is openly or discreetly, but that's the aim. The aim is to show that I am the most educated, I am the most understanding, I am above the crowd. Then you are using the same line to sever rather than to make up. And he says that this is that line. That line was supposed to be connecting everybody. But if the takabbur and pride comes into that equation, right, then it makes that person behave like this. That I want to press someone, I want to smash someone down, I want to express my superiority, I want to be spiteful towards someone, I want to show that nobody is near to me, I am quite distinguished from the rest of the crowd. So you are using that same line to break in place of making. It was supposed to be used to make people, but now you're using that same thing to break people. So you're going in total diverse. See, when I say that we need to understand these people, so we understand their temperament. How did they think? How did they reason? How did they behave? How did they conduct themselves? So if we didn't see them, we didn't live with them, we didn't interact with them, we didn't see them closely, then this is what's going to happen. And we are going to take one line, they're going to take a different line. That is why Imam Ghazali rahmatullah says, then we say that, sometimes we say that the love of the world is the root of all sin. And the hadith says that khamr, wine, is the root of all sin. Now, there's a different roots. Wine is the root of sin. But he says that if someone is infected with pride, then this becomes a root of all sins as well. Because he's going to be using the same thing to break rather than to make. He will show his superiority, he will show, try and run the next person down. He will rejoice at that person's mistakes. He wants to see now that person falls so that he can rejoice and express his superiority. So somehow he wants to show that he is greater. Whether openly, whether discreetly, but this is what he wants to show. So then, How can you ever use this line for the correct reasons? Now you see the reason why we need to connect and stay with these people here, understand their temperament, understand how they conducted themselves, understand how they worked. After all, there must have been some reason. Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi also stayed with some elder. They say about him, I haven't seen the report, but this is what they say. They say that lawla sanatain lahalaka nu'man, that if it wasn't the 2 years that I spent with my elder, perhaps it was Ja'far Sadiq radiallahu anhu, had I not spent, then I would have been destroyed. So he also needed someone to be above him. And as a genius as he was, but he had to dedicate 2 years of his life. Imagine the genius that Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi was. The world couldn't produce a person of that level again. But he also had to spend some time with someone. Now, the mistake that takes place in this age and time is that we have got the theoretical knowledge. We have got theoretical knowledge. But the application, we don't want to be under anybody. We want that freedom. Everybody wants to apply it and apply it himself according to his reason, but he doesn't want to be tied up by anybody. But then I ask you, then what's the reason that we come down smashing against the Salafis? They also don't want to be tied, and you also don't want to be tied. The only difference is, they don't want to be tied and binded in fiqh zahiri, and you don't want to be tied and binded in fiqh batini. That's the difference. They don't want to be tied in fiqh zahiri, and you don't want to be tied in fiqh batini. According to the definition of the mutaqaddimin, both is fiqh. Whether it is connected to the batin, whether it is connected to the zahir, both are called fiqh. The only difference is they don't want to be connected. They don't want to be under any type of shackles. They want to be free. And you also want to be free. So then why do you come down like a ton of bricks over them then? Have you got any right to do it? You don't have the right. But you also don't want it. They also don't want it. You want to be free, they want to be free. So the importance of being with these people here, that we see them firsthand, understand how they apply themselves in the face of this situation, what did they do? How did they correct themselves? Or how did they correct a situation? How did they conduct themselves? There was one saintly person, Hassan Shah rahmatullahi, who was the murid of Al-Mu'a Gangohi Sahib rahmatullahi. Now many of them were not even ulama, but there were so many things that you could learn from them. They say about Amir Shah Khan Sahib rahmatullahi, he wasn't an alim. But as Khalid Tayyib Sahib rahmatullahi used to say, that you talk about any subject, discuss any subject, and you'll find some knowledge from this person here. Because he spends so much of quality time with all the elders, that he was like a gateway to a lot of knowledge. You talk about this and he's a gateway to a knowledge. And you talk about this, he's got a gateway to that knowledge. So there's so much of knowledge in that person, understanding, that he stayed and he understood, he observed his elders very, very well. When he observed them, he understood them. And he knew then how to apply himself. He had an invite to Calcutta, this Hasan Shah rahmatullahi. I used to see Mufti Sahib rahmatullahi sometime coming to visit Qari Tayyib Sahib rahmatullahi. It was his routine. He was a senior Mufti Sahib of the whole of India at that time. At that time, India, Pakistan, the whole world used to be listening to him. His knowledge was like exemplary knowledge. It's a walking. If you knew Mufti Sahib rahmatullahi, and he'll relate something to you, say 20 years ago. And again, if he relates to you word for word, verbatim, he'll relate that to you. So his memory was such. Okay. And then, in knowledge, etc., and obviously people rated him greater. Who was greater, Allah Pak knows, but generally the people that we seen, they rated him greater. But even he would come to Hazrat Qayyid Ebsab rahmatullahi, I would see myself. Then he would sit like a humble servant, like our servant works, sits. And he will sit there sometimes half an hour in one posture, like the tashahhud posture. And if he needs to address something, then he'll address it with respect. Though in principle there were certain issues that he would differ with Qari Yusuf Rahmatullahi, serious differences. But that would not allow him to show any type of disregard or disrespect towards him. In principle, certain issues, he had his own opinion, Right? But that would not make them show any type of disrespect to each other. In fact, at times Qari Yusuf Rahmatullahi should come and refer to Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi certain masail, and Mufti Sahib would explain to him. So, how do we apply ourselves? How do we interact? How do we socialize? How do we work? Now, if we learn only the theory and we didn't learn this side of it, then the madrasas and all that will become like a university. See, the university, the professor, the lecturer, he just connects himself just to the lecture and it's over, finished. He's only connected to the student in the lecture, and that's as the lecture ends, and he's ended. He's got no contact with the student afterwards. And here they say, no, I have to be with him. Here of Imam Abu Yusuf Rahmatullahi, and he spent so many years, 10, 15 years with Abu Hanifa Rahmatullahi, or even more. And then the contact is so thick that the day his son passed away, so he requested his people that you attend the ghusl, janaza and whatever else. Because if I'm going to go for that, then I will miss out the lesson of Abu Hanifa Rahmatullahi. And that will be such a loss that I can't recover the loss afterwards. Missing his lesson will be such a loss that I won't be able to overcome that loss. So you attend to the janaza, everything else, and I will attend the lesson. So they had that contact and that relationship. There must have been a reason for that. When I used to speak to Umarji Sahib Rahmatullahi, then he would say the same thing, that this is the problem in this day, that people are graduating and coming out, but they don't have the contact. There's no relationship. If there's a relationship, it's a very formal relationship, surface formal relationship. Right? Mufti Ahmad Khan Puri Sahib, Dhamad Barakatum, some years ago the i'tikaf was in Meerut, so he asked me to visit him. I visited him. So he complained about the same thing. This is the problem. He also says that this is the problem. That there is no relationship. There is no association. So when there is no association, then how are the colors of your elders going to rub onto you? You will have your own color. They will have a different color. So you are not connecting to them. They are not connecting to you. You are going poles apart. You are going one side and leaving one side. Mawlana Magda also complains about the same thing. He also approximately same thing he complains. So there must be something when all these elders are saying one and the same thing. There must be something in it. Okay, no, there is something short on our side. Okay, we are not connecting and we are not relating as we are supposed to be relating. Okay. So this Hasan Shah Rahmatullahi is a murid of Azma Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullahi. So anyway, he's got an invite to Calcutta. Some laying of some foundation, whether it's a masjid or whatever. So he speaks to Mawlana Ihtishamul Hasan. There were three brothers. Alhamdulillah, I've seen all these three brothers. Ihtishamul Hasan, Iftikharul Hasan, and Izharul Hasan. All the ulama, all great, great ulama. Izharul Hasan was the Amir of the Merkaz Nizamuddin. And Mawlana Zubair, most of us may have seen him. They call him Mamu. Perhaps it's his uncle, so they call him Mamu. That's Mawlana Izhar Sahib. So they were three, all three brothers. So he requested Mawlana Ihtisham Sahib, I have to undertake a journey to Calcutta, and I request you to join up with me. Right. So he said, all right. He said, no, there's a foundation laying, and then you are quite young, so perhaps you can be assistance to me, and you can be a companion on the journey as well. Right. So now look at this akabir, now look at each point at the journey, look at the whole journey and each point in this journey here. So the first point is, he took him as a companion. Right. The hadith speaks about, see, and how they apply the hadith. Ar-raqibu shaitan. or rakibani shaitanan. The person traveling alone is a shaitan. Right? The ulama will give an explanation that this is a time where there is some type of fear. When there's a time of fear and you're traveling alone, then you are doing a shaitani work. Right? But obviously when there isn't any fear and you are traveling alone, then it's a different thing altogether. One is a bodily danger and fear, and one is a danger and a fear of the spiritual self. There's a danger and the fear of the spiritual self. Right? I ask you in this day and time, if you're traveling alone on a plane and a long journey, right? Even a short journey from here to Cape Town, right? Is there a danger or not? You are seated and there's a young girl seated next to you, right? And in front of you is a television screen. You are traveling all alone. Nobody knows you and you know nobody. So is there anything that will deter you and stop you from the wrong? From speaking to the hostess, from the girl that is sitting beside you, from looking at the television that is in front of you, is there anything that is going to deter you? From performing your namaz on time? You can get consumed in something or the other. One thing or the other, you must get consumed. But if you've got a jamaat that is traveling with you, they say, Mawlana, you know, this is a television, just put it off, Right? This hostess here, or this girl is sitting next to him, can't we just swap sweets? So one person is reminding the other, we can swap seats, you know, so that we don't have to be sitting next to a girl, right? So all these type of concerns and fikr will be where you are traveling together. One person is checking the other person is checking you as well. So you're a little bit concerned now that the other person is checking me, I am checking that person, I don't slip and he doesn't slip, right? I don't begin to watch and view the wrong things and he doesn't watch the wrong things. You want to enter into a conversation with the hostess, you're not going to do it. Because it's a whole jamaat that is moving. So the jamaat that is moving gives you that imani protection. Like one is a physical protection and one is an imani protection. You need both. You need to protect your physical self and you need to... Then it's namaz time. You fall asleep, then one person is awake. Say, alright, you know what, you stay awake till 1 o'clock and I will get up from then. So I'll get you up at Fajr. So someone is staying awake, they're seeing that they get the namaz on time. But you're traveling all alone then? Then what stops you? What stops you from overstepping the mark? Like you see a lot of people, there's people that drive the trucks and all, right? Whether Indian, black or white whoever, right? And all the wrong that they get involved in. Because they are long distance drivers, right? And then there are women that are waiting for them. Right? We all know about it. We see that happening, right? They're picking them up, leaving them, doing all these type of things. Now they're driving all alone. And they're getting involved. So the temptation, how can you kill the temptation? See? So he's showing you the first leg of the journey, he's showing you, okay, don't travel alone. The traveling alone, maybe physically, maybe alright, right? But iman is in danger. So you need to do something to protect your iman as well. Like I said, you can't be sure about your nafs. You can't be confident about your nafs. You don't know when that thing will come and trip you. When that thing will come and attack you, you don't know. At some point in the journey, it's going to attack you. Again, see the application. Ar-raqibu shaitan. But now the application, through this whole exercise, through this whole traveling together, now you understand, alright, how he applied himself. Now if it was just one of us, if we just applied, well, Ar-raqibu shaitan was only on the time of danger, it was before Hijrat, when Muslims were all in danger, etc., then they were told not to travel all alone. Right. But now, do you look at it from this other perspective? You didn't look at it from this other perspective. Now, you need these people here to open your mind. Okay, dangers are of different types. And you need to guard yourself under the face of all these type of problems. Right. Now, they're traveling together. And this Mawlana Ihtisham Sahib says that this Hasan Shah Rahmatullah Alayh, he is very paban on his tahajjud. That is 1 hour or 2 hours before the time, and he gets up. Whether he's on journey, whether he's at home, and that tahajjud of his, he never misses. Now they're traveling together, and he's got a bad, serious diarrhea condition. His body is losing shape. He's old, advanced in age, and then he's got a diarrhea condition. He's just out, in and out of the toilet. So, when they started the journey, Hazrat Hasan Shah Rahmatullah Ali appointed Mulana Ihtisham Sahib as the Amir of the Safar. You see, the Bismillah's practice was that one person must be appointed as the Amir of the Safar, so you will be the Amir. So now when Mulana Ihtisham Sahib saw this, so he says to Hasan Shah Rahmatullah Ali, you see, I am your Amir, and as the Amir I'm instructing you that you're not going to get up for Tahajjud. Because I'm seeing your condition deteriorating, you know, and then you're exerting yourself. So I don't want you to get dehydrated, you're not going to get up for Tahajjud. So he didn't say a word. See, he didn't say a word. Now, just about 1 hour or something to left for Tahajjud Namaz to end. So this Mu'a Ihtisham, he's young, and he's fast asleep, right? How young people, they enjoy their sleep, so he's fast asleep. Now he feels some tap on the feet. Someone is rubbing his feet. So he gets up, and he's, you know, he got a shock. So, hey, Mu'a, what happened? Hasan Shah is crying one way, this tear just rolling down his cheeks. So what happened? What happened? He says, you know, you are the Amir. And as being the Amir, I have to listen to you. I have to take instructions from you, right? And it's about over 40, 50 years that I've taken bayat at the hands of Hazrat Mawlana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullahi. From that time till now, I haven't missed out a single Tahajjud Namaz. Now I ask you and implore you in the name of Mawlana, what respect you have for him, I ask you that you allow me to read my Tahajjud Namaz. The respect that he afforded to this young student, he's a young student, and the respect that he afforded him, that we have appointed you as the Amir, and you don't want to go against the Amir. So no, by all means, you must go and perform your Tahajjud Namaz. He saw that condition of his, to khud main namaz nahi par raha aur ye namaz na pare to. Now they went on, and then now the third step of the journey, right? At the third step of the journey, the person, the host, he took out about some 200-300 rupees or 500 rupees to offer it to Hazrat Hasan Shah Rahmatullah Ali. He refused. But by the same breath, as they came into the masjid, one person offered about 18 rupees. So that 18 rupees he took, and 9 rupees he took for himself, and 9 rupees he gave it to Mawlana Ihtisham Sahib. Now, a student, right, you know, always students, they had that type of relationship with the ustad, that they would observe what the ustad is doing. What the senior is doing, they're observing, and they inquire. They're going with the inquiring mind. Because they know that the ustad is there for a short while, thereafter they have to continue with the journey. If they're not going to take these lessons from the ustad, then, you know, you went in, but you didn't take a full lesson. So you asked the ustad, you know what, here that 500 rupees came in, you rejected it. Here that 18 or 14 rupees came in, and you accepted it, and then that was the first thing. And half of it you took, and half of it you gave it to me. What happened? He says, no, when I received that 500 rupees, then there was a little bit of israf in my heart. There was some desire. Because when I left, when I undertook the journey, I knew I had a debt to settle for about 500 rupees. So there was a desire that someone now is going to undertake my debt. The host is more or less going to see to my debt. Right? So when there was that desire that my host is going to take under, he's going to take care of my debt, but it's called israf. So therefore I rejected that money. Right? But here when I came into the masjid and that person offered that 14 or 18 rupees, there was no israf, there was no desire. When there was no desire there, then this was not israf, and there was no reason for me not to accept it. So I accepted that 14 or 18 rupees. And then, you being my travelling companion, then it was etiquette, not compulsory, but etiquette, al-hadaya mushtarakatun. Right? It was not compulsory, it was not a faraz, but as an etiquette, you know, I have received something that I should share with you as well. Right? So that was the third lesson that they learnt in that whole journey, right? And as they moved on now it was the time for them to lay the foundation. See what I'm showing you? That the importance of being with these elders, right? The Sahaba-i-Kiram, are Sahaba-i-Kiram because they were with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Right? And the longer they were, and they were with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, then their position is even higher because they were there. When a hadith is being quoted, they are there. So they know the context, they know the application. They know, don't only know the words, but they know exactly the context, the application, they saw everything. You didn't tell, you don't say, Tilmizun Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, but you say Sahabi. So the companion, companion is the person who was there at that time, who was with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Right? So there's a difference between a Tilmiz, a student, and a person that was the companion. See. And the merit is more for the company than this being the student. One is a student and one is the companion. So merit is on what? Is on that sahabiyat. Therefore you say sahabi. Right. See the excellence of suhbat against just ilm. One is ilm and one is suhbat. We talk about Mirza Mazhar Jana Jana Rahmatullahi. So someone asked him, you know, that if you were told that this moment is a moment of your du'as being accepted, then what will you ask for? Right? If you were told that this is a moment for your du'as being accepted, now, notwithstanding the fact that he was the greatest awli of his time. The Shah Waliullah Sahib, there wasn't a wali that was as great as Mirza Sahib Rahmatullahi. He says that if it was told to me that this is a moment of my du'as being accepted, I would ask for the companionship of the pious. Because there can't be a more comprehensive thing than the company of the pious. In this world, if you were the company of the pious, then you will be doing righteous works. When they are pious, then you won't remain a jahil. Because if they are pious, then they'll correct you. If you're doing something wrong, you're looking what you're not supposed to watching, right? Or you're behaving in an incorrect way, so they will be correcting you, so you won't be a jahil. Right? Then, you'll be grouped by Allah Ta'ala on the day of Qiyamah amongst those people that you love. So you love the pious, then you'll be with them. So both here and there, you will score if you are in the company of the righteous. Al-Mu'tasim says, that the Mutaqaddimeen style was totally different to the Mutaakhirin style. People of the past, their style was different. The amount of emphasis that played or they had laid upon tarbiyat and correct upbringing, you know, tarbiyat, upbringing. So the amount of emphasis that they laid upon upbringing, they didn't lay that amount of emphasis on studying. Studying is important. Who says that studying is not important? But the amount of emphasis they had laid upon tarbiyat was far greater than the emphasis they had laid upon studying. I was wondering why was it like this? This is occurring to my mind. Why did it work like this? So the person that has got that right tarbiyat, then he'll have a better understanding of taqwa. When he has a better understanding of taqwa, right, then in whatever position he is, right, then he'll be very good in his position. Right? Because he's got taqwa at heart. Now, for example, he's married, right? He's got taqwa at heart. So he knows now, I must see to it, I must ensure that I keep my wife comfortable mentally, emotionally, physically. In every respect, I must see to it that she is comfortable. But if he's only got ilm, but he doesn't have that tarbiyat, so he doesn't have that level of taqwa. So now my comfort comes first, afterwards she's comfortable or not, it's irrespective. And if he's got that taqwa, then he'll be concerned. He'll be concerned about her welfare. How many times I have to tell some students, sometimes I have to tell ulama, you're living in a big home, right? And you're newly married. So you just come to the masjid, read your faraz namaz only, and then go straight home. Because I can imagine now, if it's a young wife you got now, 16, 17, 18 years of age, it's a big home, right? Right? And then she hears about something shooting and someone dying and all that, right? So isn't she gripped in fear? She's gripped in fear now. She'll lock herself in the room, whatever else she'll do. Right? Now, you're not understanding. You say, no, Jamaat Namaz, I must read my Namaz Jamaat, and there's a tabligh program after that, and so and so, Mulana coming, I have to listen to that bayan. Now you pull in 2 or 3 hours, now she is suffering there. And now she can't go and complain to anybody. She doesn't want her marriage to go onto the rocks. The only support she's got is you, and you are exploiting her. Is that the right thing, I ask you? Is that the right thing? Now that is the effect of not having the right type of tarbiyat. If you don't have the right type of tarbiyat, then you are just concerned about your welfare and your comfort. And she, whatever can happen to her, it can happen to her. It's all right. It's not my problem. And here, the other way, the person who's got tarbiyat and he's got taqwa, then he's concerned. Then you don't have to teach him. Like, you know, I showed you the story about the shawl. You don't have to teach him. Then, for example, if he's going to be delayed, he's phoning up straight away. That, see, I'm delayed here. I'll come in half an hour's time. Don't wait for me. Don't expect me. I'm safe, I'm coming just now. I'm near the home, right? So he's phoned up. And here I get cases coming up, you know. They're just newly married. They're newly married, 2-3 years in the marriage. And the husband comes up 1 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock at night, and the girl doesn't know what to do. Hey, what's happening? Has he got some other girl in mind? Or has he got some business? What's the problem with this person? He doesn't even inform. He doesn't even show any particular way he's going to be. Now, how does this girl, how does she manage her life? And then you hear that, no, they got a lot of knowledge of Islam. But then how that knowledge is being applied? No, it's not my right, it's not my duty to tell her where am I. So I ask you, if it was your daughter, would you appreciate this? Now she's living all alone, she's living in fear. She's gripped it. Normally the girl is quite young compared to the boy. But she's living in virtual fear. Now that person who's got taqwa, I said, no. I must see to her welfare, I must see to her well-being. Is she comfortable? Is she at ease mentally, physically, emotionally? Is she comfortable or not? So he'll see all these things. Otherwise, like I say, it's just you. It's just your comfort. I must be right. And anybody else, that is not my business. So this is how you will look at it. But that's not the Islam that we've been taught. That is the Islam that is minus the suhbat, you see. Minus that companionship, then this is the Islam that you will practice. It's just you and nothing else but you. My one cousin was in Ireland, you know, Dublin. So he says, that is the white type of life, English type of mentality. He says, man received his father-in-law. You know, the student came and related to them, to my cousin. Okay, last night my father-in-law came in, you know. It was cold. -10 it was something, and so he came in, knocked at the door. So we were busy having meals. Me and my wife were having meals. So we asked him to wait outside. Right? Because we only had about 8 pieces of chops, we couldn't include him now. I'll have only 4 pieces and she'll have 4 pieces, so we couldn't include him. Right? And then he goes on, he says, you know, we couldn't join him in the meals. We asked him to wait. When we had our meals, then we called him. And he proposes to live with us for 1 week, and we'll have to charge him boarding and lodging as well. Now that is the mentality, you see. See, if we're going to be trained by them, and their schools, and their learning, then that will be the shape of our minds. See, unfortunately, our people are sending their children to these type of schools, private schools, alright, they call that education. But with that education, that culture is coming in. Now they live an independent, cold life. So you also begin to become an independent, cold person. Nobody must stamp my toes, I do my own thing, you do your own thing, finish, end of the story. So is that the Islam that we've been taught? No. The Islam that we've been taught is that even the dog don't let it suffer. We hear of Sayyid Ahmad Rifai, rahmatullahi alayhi, that great bazook, you know, with the hand on wisdom had come out. Then amongst his stories you hear about him, that he's sitting to make zikr, and one cat or something or a dog came to sleep. It found the shawl of his, so he went and slept there. Now, he said to himself, if I'm going to pull away the shawl, that thing is going to, sleep is going to be disturbed. That thing's sleep is going to be disturbed. Now, what should I do? If I'm going to move away, it's sleep going to be disturbed. I pull it, it's going to be disturbed. So he cut his shawl. He cut his shawl, let the thing sleep, enjoy sleep, and when it caught up, he took the shawl and sewed it up again. Now that's the Islam that we've been taught. And these people, if they're going to be teaching us Islam and our values, then their values are going in a different direction completely. So the third point we were talking about, it came to that foundation laying. See, I am hearing this type of stories all the time. You get this type of phones coming in. So then it works on your mind. These phones are coming now. They are trained up in this type of school, this type of colleges, etc., etc. Now their minds are going in that way. Their parents don't realize what's happening to the child. They say, no, he's very well behaved. See. For every second word, yes, sir, thank you, please. So that's it. The surface. It's just surface etiquette. But, dil ki mohabbat, that's not dil ki mohabbat. It's not coming from the heart. It's just a surface. So at the time of the foundation, now, that Hasan Shah Rahmatullah Ali, he jumped in himself and he poured the foundation himself and ended the whole thing up. So now the student, Mawlana Ihtisham Sahib, says, you called me to lay the foundation. But then at the foundation, I saw you jumping in. I saw you jumping into the trench. Whereas you told me that I would have to jump in. I said, yeah, I had proposed that you come in and you jump into the trench. But then I thought, you are a Mawlana, right? And you need to serve Deen. I saw the trench, it was quite deep. Had you jumped and you had broken your leg or something, then that would have affected the cause of Deen, the service of Deen. Right? So I didn't want you to get hurt. So if I jumped, then I'm not so actively serving Deen as you are going to be actively serving Deen. So if my leg broke or something, it's alright. But your leg mustn't break. See that? See this understanding, this fine understanding. It comes with sohbat, with understanding. He had taken the sohbat and the company of Mawlana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, a non-alim, but ulama today we are sitting and we are learning from him. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq.